Hi, this is Jean-Jacques Taylor, and you're listening to Jock Talk. This is a podcast where I talk about the Cowboys, the team I've covered as a beat writer, columnist, TV insider, and radio host for 28 years. I'll also talk about the NFL and the things I love, working out, streaming, food, and all things Dallas. My boy Big Joe and the Big Rig, one of my oldest friends, produces the show and occasionally chimes in with his thoughts on the Cowboys. After all, he's a lifelong Cowboys fan, and he played high school, college, and semi-pro football. Welcome to Jock Talk, where sports is fluid. What's true today might not be true an hour, a day, or a month from now. I'm going to give you the truth straight. No chaser. Glad to have you aboard. Let's get it. Welcome to episode 92 of Jock Talk. I'm Jean-Jacques Taylor. Joined by my boy Big Joe and the Big Rig. What's the sit, Red Dog?
We are 5x5. The light is red, and we are 5x5, my friend.
That is good to hear, as always. We hope you're prepared to be entertained and dazzled for the next hour or so as we discuss a litany of Dallas-Fort Worth sports, including, you know, we are blessed to have some of the top athletes in the world, 25 years or younger, floating around DFW, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. First, though, I do like to always tell you, we can't do the show without my friends at Greening Law. If you're ever, ever involved in an accident, it's not your fault, or there's been some medical malpractice, or you're at a workplace somewhere and you've been injured, check this out. If somebody else's negligence has caused you some harm, what you need to do is pick up the phone, call 972-934-8900. And all you have to do when the phone gets answered is say, hey, here's the situation. Here's my details. What do you think? And if they bring you on as a client, it's been a heck of a day for you. Real talk. And here's why. Number one, they don't get paid unless you get paid. So you don't have to worry about where you fit in on the priority list. Number two, the consultation is free. It don't cost you nothing to pick up the phone. Number three, they're going to ride or die with you. They're going to lead you down the road and show you the path, hopefully to success. They're going to tell you when to turn left and when to turn right and when to hold tight. They're going to tell you when to walk fast and when to slow down and when to stand still. They're going to do all those things so that you have the best chance of success. And what I mean is, with them, you don't have to worry about anything. You need a doctor, they got you, you know? You just show up and go. Seriously. You need a specialist, they got you. They find one for you, you just show up and go. They take care of every single solitary thing so you can focus on two things: healing and renewal. And what I mean is, get your mind right, get your body right, and then get your life back. It's really that simple. Let Greening Law help you accomplish that. Get your mind right, get your body right, get your life back. They want you focused on healing and renewal, and everything that they do is designed to make that happen. 972-934-8900. The number to call if you're ever involved in an accident and it's not your fault. Hey, do me a favor. Seriously, take 30 seconds, go to the YouTube channel, The Real Jock Talk, subscribe, like, leave a comment. We'd appreciate it. Seriously, we got some huge things coming up. I was just talking to Big Joe about a couple of them before the show started. We're going to let you know about them probably in the next week or so. We just got to finalize a couple of details. But that's coming up. Don't want you to miss it. Go to the YouTube channel, subscribe, so you won't miss any of this great stuff coming up. I ain't gonna lie to you. You'll want to do that. You can always follow the show on IG at The Real Jock Talk. You can follow me on Twitter at JJT Journalist. You know the deal. If you think you follow me, you don't. My account was hijacked, but you can find me at I Am Jean-Jacques Taylor. Same as with Clapper. I'm a Clapper contributor. I do a lot of Cowboy videos over there. A lot of sports talk over there. Video style. You can find me on Clapper. I Am Jean-Jacques Taylor. It's got a TikTok-like format, but check it out. I think you'll really enjoy it. Now, dog, I was watching the Rangers game the
other
day.
Hold up. What? 92.
Oh, I done forgot, man. Tony Tobin.
Tony Tobin. Roger that. All right. Carry on, sir. we got to get them numbers out the way, dog.
Yeah. All right. No worries. It's all good, man. I was watching the Rangers game the other day, And I was just thinking about Evan Carter and Wyatt Langford in the lineup. And I've talked to you about this before. You know, the best teams that are ready to really win and sustain winning have a core group of veterans who can ball out. And then they got these young guys who will be future stars, if not stars right now. And you got that mix of youth and veterans, and that's when you can really ball out and win, to me, at the highest level and sustain it for a minute. That's why I don't think the Rangers are like, well, they won the World Series, now they'll disappear for the next 5 or 6 years. See, I don't think like that, because they got a group of veterans we know with Semien and Seager. But they got some young guys who can ball, man. And so I was thinking, and this is not an original thought, but I think it's an interesting thought given where we are in Dallas right now. Who are the stars in Dallas who are 25 and under? And, Doug, when you start thinking about it, you're like, wow, we are blessed to hear. And if you got money to go see these cats in person, do so. And if not, really enjoy them on TV. And this is what I mean, man. Sometimes we get so caught up as a society, fans, media, whomever, bitching and moaning about your team ain't done this, and this guy wants this much money, and franchise is dumb because they won't pay this guy, and I don't want to lose this guy to free agency, or we're on this losing streak, or, you know, you get so caught up in all of that that you really forget to appreciate the greatness that you're watching. Like, I remember Dirk's last couple years, I decided I was going to make a conscious choice to really enjoy watching Dirk play basketball, because he's so good and he wasn't going to be around much longer. So, back to the original point. So I'm watching the Rangers game, and I'm just like, dude. I call myself dude sometimes when I'm talking to myself. I was like, dude, just look at this, man.
I always call myself, I call myself self. I say self.
I've been known to do that too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, Evan Carter is 21. Wyatt Langford is 22.
Yep.
Wow. And Josh Young, who's out right now with a broken wrist, would normally be in that group, except he just turned 26. So for purposes of this discussion, he's too old. But when you got those kind of two young guys who appear to be headed for stardom, now I don't know if they'll be superstars, but they appear headed for stardom. And one day we'll have a conversation about what I believe the difference between stars and superstars are. We had it briefly last week, I think. But
yep,
that's a very nuanced conversation that could go on for days and hours.
It's a good one, though.
Yeah, it is. But when you look at Wyatt Langford and you look at Evan Carter, you feel good about the Rangers' future. And we also know that right now, and I ain't finna go through a whole bunch of names, the Rangers got a ton of dudes in the minor leagues, from the low levels in rookie ball and A-ball to the double-A team. And some cats at the Triple A team, like an Al Leiter, that you think will figure it out and become future stars. So the future is bright for them, but it starts with Langford and it starts with Evan Carter. So then, you move on to the Dallas Mavericks, who start the playoffs next in, a week or so from now. And obviously, Luka is one of the best players in the world, one of the top two or three players in the NBA. He'll get some votes for MVP. How many he gets, you know, we'll see. But he's 25. And the thing about Luka, man, and I've said this before, he gives you at least one wow moment every game. And some games he gives you three or four. Some days he gives you more than that. But he gives you at least one per game. And somebody put a highlight reel of his up and put it on Twitter the other day, man. And I was just like, oh, my God. And it was only this person, I think, when they put it up, said, I only did a 2.5-minute highlight reel. I didn't do one that lasted, you know, 5 minutes. And it was just, and they, you know, it's Luka. So they weren't all shots. A lot of them were passes. And just some of the most incredible basketball moves you've ever seen. Well, some of the stuff.
His work in the lane is incredible.
Bro.
Anyway, just, man, his own pace, the wide body, the angles. It's crazy, man.
You know, somebody was mentioning that when they were writing a piece on Luka. And they said, in putting their piece together, they go, Luka's game will allow Luka to play like Luka until his mid-30s. because his game ain't never been built on athleticism. It's been built on his size, his handles, which is an underrated part of his game, because he can get wherever he wants on the court and there's nothing you can do about it. And then his array of tricky moves that, you know, however you defend him doesn't matter because he got so many moves in his bag, he getting his shot off. And so when you put all that together, because his game ain't defined by athleticism, you know, it has a longevity to it. And so it'll be interesting to watch him grow over the next 5 years as he hits 30. But he's just not hitting his prime now, man, because what happens? He's getting the mindset to go with all his other athletic skills. And, you know, he's a terror right now.
When they say athleticism, they mean above the rim.
Right. Because clearly he's a terrific athlete.
Yeah. That's why I was sitting there saying, I get it. I just want to specify. Yeah, he don't play above the rim.
And we're going to take the quickest of quick exit ramps. The reason, and the playoffs are going to be phenomenal. And, you know, the reason that the Mavericks are so dangerous is when you have guys like Luka and Kyrie, home court advantage doesn't mean anything. I mean, yeah, they would prefer to play at home, but those two guys don't care about playing on the road. They don't care about playing wherever they play. And so that really reduces the home court advantage some, just because you know that they'll be able to help the team withstand the early momentum that comes out with being on the road. Plus, you know, at the end of the game, clutch time, last 5 minutes within 6 points, you feel comfortable that you got two guys on your team who can make it happen, regardless of who the other team has. And that's what makes the Mavericks a very dangerous team as we head into the playoffs, even though they got a very difficult first-round opponent in the Clippers. Now, back on the highway.
Yeah, I'm gonna expound on that later. I was gonna let you get back.
Thank you. And the other guy, who's not a star yet, but has all the makings of turning into a really good player, I don't know that he'll be a star, is Derek Lively Jr. And this is what I mean. Just look at all the rookies that come in the NBA. The NBA is hard as hell. That's why you know that a lot of rookies come in and don't really do nothing, because the transition is just hard. And this dude was one and done, and he averaged 8.8 points, 6.8 rebounds, shot 74% from the field. He's on the perfect team right now because he can pick and roll and dunk. He don't have to do a whole lot.
Yep.
Plays with a lot of energy. And who's going to be surprised? Really, real talk now. Well, Gafford is here, and so that'll put his numbers down a little bit. But who's going to be surprised if his numbers go up and he averages like 12-9 next year? Or average a double-double in case, you know.
In the playoffs, he could do that. Easy. On the pick and roll. Yeah. If he gets a little more time, but they got a two-headed monster down there. It's all good.
So Derek Lively, to me, is on the list at 19 years old, list of future stars at under 25. So, you know, you got Wyatt Langford, you got Evan Carter with the Mavericks, you got Luka, I think you got Derek Lively with the Stars, with the Mavericks, and then you move on to the Dallas Stars, man. And you want to know why the Dallas Stars are kicking butt and taking names in the playoff, during the regular season this year? It's really not all that complicated. I mean, it's really not when you look at it. And they beat Seattle yesterday, or they beat Seattle Saturday to win their division. Not that it matters so much in hockey, but they hadn't done it in 7 years. So anytime you win a division and you haven't done it in 7 years, it's a good thing. They are 51-21 with 9 overtime losses this year. They got 111 points, only 1 point behind the New York Rangers for the most points in the league. That tells you how good they are. And, duh, we all know, if you follow the Stars, then you know about the names. You know about Pavelski, and you know about Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. You know about them cats. Can I tell y'all something? Them cats all old. Those are the old veterans we're talking about. But when you talk about the young dudes, man, how about Jake Ottinger, the goalie? He 25, man. How about Jason Robertson, the guy who led the Stars in scoring this year? Oh, yeah, he's 24. How about Wyatt Johnston, who led the team in goals with 32? He's 20 years old. And then how about the best player on the team, Miro Heiskanen, the all-star defenseman? He's 24. You got, and those cats, Heiskanen is a superstar. Johnston is on his way to being a superstar. Robertson is a star. And then Ottinger is a star. Dude, that's a whole lot of firepower from your young boys. And that's why the Stars been kicking ass, taking names all year.
Just offhand, I'm sitting here thinking, and I'm regretting all the times that back in the day when you worked for the morning news, and you went by that row of tickets or whatever y'all had, and you said, hey, man, I got Rangers. Nah, I got Stars. You know how many times you said I got Stars, and I said no about 15 times.
Yeah,
now,
bro.
Now I wish I would have took them tickets because I've never been to a live Stars game.
Is that right?
And, yeah, because a lot of people, I have a friend of mine, he was talking about that. He was like, man, the line changes alone are enough to watch in a live game that you don't see on TV, how them guys really hustle to get on the ice and all of that.
Dude,
and I was
hockey
like,
is amazing in person, especially if you got good seats.
Yeah.
Well, you should go next year. I mean, we should just make it a plan to just go to a game and check it out.
Yeah, I will. I will.
I went to one this year with my boy.
Yeah,
I was blessed with some tickets, and so I called him. Hockey in person is a game changer.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking about. Like, damn, all them time, you want Stars, you want this, you want that. Hey, that was the hookup back in the day. I ain't lying. That whole whatever that is, you walk by when you left. You was like, hey man, you want this one? Oh, you want that one? I was like, nah, that's all right. That's all right. Yeah, I should have took all that. I should have went to everything.
And I had a lot of leeway because I was really good at what I did, and I told them I just passed these tickets out to the people who make my life easier. Sometimes that was my friends. Most of the time it was people I dealt with.
Yeah.
I didn't the work world.
It's all good.
And then we come to your Dallas Cowboys. And they got three of the best players in the league. All under 25. You can start with Tyler Smith, who's probably next year about to start his run of being a perennial All-Pro for probably about 7 or 8 years. I, like a lot of people, didn't give him a lot of credit when they took him because he was coming out of Tulsa, Group of Five school. And then he had so many issues with holding penalties.
Yep.
I was just like, I don't know how your cat going to thrive in the NFL.
Yeah.
Well, Will McClay gets paid to make these decisions, and dadgone it, he made a good one right then.
Yes, sir. North Crowley's own Tyler Smith.
There you go.
There you go.
And then you got CeeDee Lamb, who just turned 25. Yes, he's playing on that $17 million a year contract, which I personally would play for just because I would like $17 million.
Yeah.
But he's worthy of a deal that's closer to 30. He's going to get it at some point, just a matter of when the Cowboys get around to making it happen. Now, according to Calvin Watkins, they ain't even talked to him yet. But that being said, CeeDee Lamb, All-Pro, one of the best receivers in the league, just turned 25. And then you got the Lion King, Micah Parsons, still 24, one of the best defensive players in the league, top three defensive player of the year. He'll do that again next year. And it doesn't matter whether some people are jealous of him or he gets on some people's nerves, he ain't going nowhere no time soon. And so Micah Parsons, CeeDee Lamb, Tyler Smith, three of the best in the league, each of them 25 or younger. On the Dallas Stars, you got Jake Ottinger, Wyatt Johnson, Jason Robertson, Miro Heiskanen, all of them 25 or younger. On the Dallas Mavericks, you got Luka Doncic, who needs no other explanation, Derek Lively, each of them 25 or younger. And then on the Rangers, you got Wyatt Langford, Evan Carter. That's 11 dudes, 25 years or younger, who anybody would love to pay good money to see because they some of the best in the world at their game. So the next time you feel like moaning and groaning, just for a second, think about all the great athletes we got in Dallas-Fort Worth and just take a second to appreciate them. That's all. You ain't got to do it long. You ain't got to do it often. Just every now and then, just remember, it's good to have superstars to watch, man, because it don't have to be like that.
So did we get confirmation that Michael was, there was something going on with Michael or not? Or is it just much ado about nothing?
I mean, I believe this, man. And I don't think that's really two different things. The first part of it is nobody gets along with everybody at your job.
Roger that.
So the fact that somebody said that Micah wouldn't wear, you know, is wearing thin around here, you know, who cares? If the right people didn't say it, it doesn't matter. And then the other thing is that, you know, the guy who said it on the flagship network, he said it, and then the start of the next sentence coming out of his mouth was, I don't know how much of it is true. So why did you say it?
Yeah.
I mean, why did you frame it like that if you say, I don't know if it's true?
Yeah, Jock is 6'5". I don't know how much of that's true, but
yeah,
I ain't never measured him. I ain't never stood next to the guy, but he's supposed to be 6'5".
This much we know. If Jerry and Steven ain't mad at Micah Parsons, it don't matter. Okay? This much we know. And so you can leave it with that, man.
Roger that.
So that's a look at some of the top players in Dallas-Fort Worth and in the country, you know, doing what they do. Now let's move on to your favorite topic, man. The Cowboys draft.
Man, I got a lot of favorites, man. Baseball, guns, the Cowboys draft.
But I'm gonna throw something out there at you first before we hit into the draft. This was just a random question. How would you describe Dez Bryant's career? And I'm asking you that because yesterday, I believe, was the 6th anniversary of the Cowboys releasing Dez Bryant. And he was on Twitter this week saying some negative things about Jason Garrett. And that's neither here nor there. His experience is his experience. But when you talk to other people in the organization, over the years ago, they had a different take on some of the things that ailed Dez. Now, I'm sure he would disagree, but I'll bring some of those up. But now that you got that for context, how would you describe Dez's career?
I would say Dez was a superstar at one time, one of the best players in the league at one time. I would say Dez would have played longer as a Cowboy if Tony Romo don't go down. Because once Dak came, Dak wasn't going to throw the balls to Dez that Tony Romo threw. Tony Romo was putting that thing on Dez's ear. He put it on Dez's back between Dez's shoulder blades. Dez would catch that thing. He could have three people on him, and Tony would throw it to him anyway. So once you get that, you break in a new quarterback that's going to play it by the numbers and not force you the ball like Tony did. And it was a good forcing. You know what I'm saying? It was like Randy Moss and Tom Brady. It was that lethal between them two guys. I think once Tony was gone, that's where the fall off was for everybody, because it was a Tony Romo-driven offense, and he got Dez the ball whenever he wanted to, just about. So
I think that's a terrific description of Dez's career. I think there's a lot of fact-based information in that. Dez Bryant, 18 100-yard games. Do you have a guess on how many multiple touchdown games Dez Bryant had?
Let's see. 25.
Now, that's a big guess. Now, he had 15. I don't know if you think that's a big number or a small number.
That's a big number. Two touchdowns. Yeah. I mean, he did it so often.
Yeah, no, he did it 15 times.
And early on, though. Early on, later on, you know, it was, you know, it's one of them things where you say you're worth the price of genius as long as you stay a genius,
right? You know, this is true.
As long as you giving us them numbers, we'll take all your bullshit.
He never figured that out, and I'm not sure I'm not sure that's his fault. And you might be like, well, what do you mean that's not his fault?
Oh, not me.
He was a star at Lufkin and never had to figure it out.
Yep.
He was a star at Oklahoma City and never had to figure it out.
Yep.
And he was a really good player his first 2 years in Dallas, and then he was a superstar. Mm-hmm. The next 3 years, And he never had to figure it out. By the time he figured it out, it was too late. He was gone.
Well, that's the Michael Vick deal right there.
Yeah.
Same principle. A lot of guys go through that when you're the best guy. And the guys that don't make it to the NFL is the best guy on the team. And they never figure that out. And then it goes into the workplace. And how come the rules don't apply to me?
Yeah.
You know?
So Dez Bryant, he, you know, one of the things I was disappointed in what he said. Now let me rephrase this. What you said is right. The end of his career coincided with the promotion of Dak, because what is Dak up until 2 years ago? A guy who never threw interceptions.
Very cautious.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Amari Cooper had to talk him into breaking protocol a couple of times. I remember they had those conversations.
Exactly. So when you know that, Dak was never, ever going to force the ball to Dez. Even if Dez said, "Oh, just throw it up, I got you." Mm-hmm. Dak was like, "Nah, bro." No, not me. And as a young quarterback, he really wasn't going to do that.
Yeah, he was trying to stay in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a big reason why they never find that chemistry. And what Joe says is absolutely right. Romo was a gunslinger by nature. Oh, you can go up and catch that thing? Okay, fine. Boom.
Yeah.
I throw it in between three guys believing that you're going to jump up and go get it.
Yeah, that was fourth down. The catch against Green Bay that was not a catch was fourth down and short, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah. It was either third and short or fourth and short. I think it was fourth and short. Tony just flipped it up there.
Yeah, Dez, go make a play.
Yeah.
So that's the backdrop to it. Now, Dez, in his Twitter, he was really going after Garrett the other day. And one of the things he said was, they should have moved me around. They should have used me like this. I would have been dangerous in the slot, blah, blah, blah. The only problem with that, and I'm not disputing he could have done all of that. What's the problem with that, man? That wasn't the offense that they were running. They were running the Cowboys' traditional timing-based offense. Now, you could argue, well, they should have changed, but they didn't. And why didn't they change, man? Because they had success offensively with this.
Offense wasn't the problem.
No. And not so you can look that back, offense.
You can look back on it. He needed to shut the hell up, but that's all right. I mean, I don't know.
That offense was predicated. Okay, check this out, y'all. It's no different. Literally, very little difference between what the Cowboys were doing with Dez and when they were really good in the 90s winning Super Bowls and what Peyton Manning was doing with the Colts with Edgerrin James, Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, which is, and Dallas Clark, which yep. is, those guys used very little motion. Those guys lined up on the same side of the field every time, and those guys... Two Hall of Famers, Harrison and James, a guy who's been considered for the Hall of Fame several times, Reggie Wayne, and a perennial All-Pro in Dallas Clark. And they just said, our guys are better than your guys. We don't need to trick you. We're just going to line up, run routes, and beat you. And that's what the Cowboys did in the 90s when they won. And that's the same offense they ran with Dez and Romo and DeMarco Murray and whoever else they had out there, and Witten. And they said, our guys are better than your guys. There's nothing you could do to stop them. And we're just going to run our regular routes without a lot of frills to it because our offense is based on timing. Now, here's the interesting thing and the thing that doesn't get talked a lot about, the thing that numerous people told me in the organization. Dez... Just like we just got through saying Luka was not a great athlete, which really just meant he didn't play above the rim. He doesn't play above the rim. Dez was a phenomenal athlete. Big. What was Dez? Dez was like 6'1", 6'2". Dez was 6'2", 220 with about 4% body fat.
Yeah, but Dez was country strong. And Dez had an attitude. I always used to tell people Dez play like he 12 and everybody else is 8.
Yep.
You know, he would try to run. He would blow his, you know, remember he'd blow a quad or a calf because he would never go down. He would fight to the end. He ran like Walter Payton at wide receiver. And he would just fight. Next thing you know, he limping. A lot of time, I wish he would catch the ball and go down to maybe lie. He played so hard.
Right. You know,
but he lived hard. which messed up his longevity in this league with the Dallas Cowboy.
Well, here's he had some injuries, and yes, he would scrape and scrap for every inch of turf on the field, and he played with a fury that I really admired. Here's the thing, though. But you have to talk to people in the organization to tell you this. Dez Bryant was never a great route runner. Dez Bryant was a very physical player, and he used his athleticism because he never created a bunch of separation. But he would use his athleticism and his physical strength to maneuver his body and contort his body in ways to go grab, get the ball, or shield you from stopping him from getting the ball. And here's the point of that. When injuries robbed him of his athleticism, he didn't have anything else in his bag. During that time period when he was such a phenomenal athlete and he was dominating people physically, if he had spent as much time becoming, you know, I'm not even going to say a superior route runner, but a really good route runner, a quality route runner consistently, then I think he'd have been able to stretch his career again. His career went much like a running back. You know, it was a little bit of a slow start, a great zenith, and boom, off a cliff.
And well, part of that, I think part of that is him. Part of that is what the Cowboys asked him to do.
Yeah.
Part of that is, you know, that's a little bit of blame to go all around, because it's up to you to, it's up to you. You could be, you know, like the best thing about Kobe or Michael Jordan is that they always added to their game. Larry Bird could have been a three-point shooter, but they always added to their game in the offseason.
Right.
Or you can just stay with the status quo, and when you don't, like you say, when you don't have it no more, you don't have it no more.
Yeah.
So that's all they asked him to do was to get open.
In 2017, he caught 69 passes for 838 yards, 6 touchdowns. Missed the next season with an Achilles. Did not play in 2019. Came back at 32 in 2020. And caught 6 passes for 47 yards and 2 touchdowns in Baltimore. So, really, I mean, he didn't do anything. He didn't do... I'm finna do the numbers right quick. He caught 88 for 1320 and 16 touchdowns in 2014. The next 4 years of his career, he caught 156 passes for 2100 yards and 19 touchdowns. So, I mean, just, but I'm telling you, man, Dez Bryant 2014, you can't do nothing with him.
Nah, he's the best guy.
You can't do nothing with him, dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can do nothing but hope and pray.
Anytime
he don't catch the ball.
Well, anything they ran with him, he run a drag route, catch the ball behind the line and get 18 yards, just stiff arming DBs.
Right.
You tell the pursuit guy to him. Amazing athlete.
Now, me and Dez had a, I don't know how you would describe our relationship. I don't know. I don't even know how to, we had a, It started off great because I got to know him before he got even drafted by the Cowboys. I did the first big takeout on him in Dallas, sat down with him for several hours, had a lot of great conversations with him before he got drafted and then after he got drafted because we had some mutual friends. And so I kind of met him under that guise. And even when he first started playing, it was cool. And then, you know, and I do this and I make no apologies for it. When you are a star, you get held to a star standard. And, you know, and I tell cats all the time at a certain point, okay, if you don't want us to hold us to a star standard, just let me know. I'll hold you to an average standard. And so, you know, we had a big falling out in, I'm not sure what year that was. It's probably 2016 or 17. And it was some of his fault. It was some of my fault, as any dispute usually is. And it was some of just nature's fault. I had written a very critical column on him after he came back from an injury and did something like caught two or three passes for, you know, 20 yards or something against Seattle in the first game back from an injury. And he didn't make much of an impact. And I wrote that, and he didn't like what I wrote. But I had something that I could not get out of on a Monday, and so I couldn't get to the locker room. Tuesday was the players' off day. Wednesday, I went looking for him in the locker room, and he wasn't there. So I wrote this on Sunday, and he was looking for me Monday, and he didn't see me till Thursday. So you can imagine his pent-up frustration. And so I approached him to talk about it. He started yelling at me. I started yelling back. The scrub Devin Street intervened, and I fussed at him. Fussed, who? Not cussed. Devin Street. That's exactly right. Like who? Like stay the out of my conversation, dog. Dez is grown. Dez don't need you to come in and say nothing. And Devin Street said something to me. And, you know, my final response was, dog, I'm better at my job than you are at yours. Now, I would not say that about Dez, because Dez was not a pro. But I'd say I'm as good at my job as you are at yours. That's how I felt at that particular time. But anyway, I digress. But we had a big disagreement that ended up getting national coverage. And Dez accused me of using the N-word toward Devin Street. And that was a big deal back then. And luckily, several people overheard the conversation and insisted that I had not done that in the locker room. And there was like a full investigation by ESPN, man, into what I said.
You sure it didn't slip out just a little bit?
Nah, not even a little bit. I don't play like that at work. Because it's not a playing matter at work. It didn't slip out at all. I'm very cognizant of what I said.
I don't know if you was using that or not.
No, because I'm very cognizant of what I said at work, because I understand the circumstances and I understand the environment and I understand that black men do not get the chance, the second and third opportunities that their white counterparts get, especially when you've risen to the level of columnist. So I'm very, it's like dealing with your kids sometimes. You can want to make them, look very angry and be in complete control. It's not that you're out of control. Some people look like they're out of control and they're out of control. But anyway, I digress on that.
Roger.
The bottom line is that me and Dez had a complicated relationship, but, it was fine. I think the last couple times I've seen him, and, you know, if I saw him today, I don't think it'd be any big deal. Other than, yo, what's up, dog? What Okie State going to do in the Big 12 with everybody gone? But I just thought it was interesting that we're coming up on the 6-year anniversary of his career. And he was like a comet, man. He was here. He did amazing things. And then he was gone. And just like that, dog, it was a wrap. Now, as we shift to the Cowboys draft, how do you see that thing playing out in a couple of weeks?
You never know with the Cowboys, you know, you just don't. I mean, some of the stuff they do, you go, what the hell? And then it ends
like
up.
What?
The CeeDee Lamb. When they drafted CeeDee Lamb, we didn't need him. We didn't need him at all. But it turns out, he came in, he won the third receiver job, he busted people's ass on the regular, and he's been busting people's ass since he's been here. So was he extra or not? No, he became a whole nother weapon. And then we didn't know he could do punt returns. We didn't know he was good at rushing the ball. We knew he failed to us, but we didn't need that particular guy.
Right, right.
And so they did that, and I was going, what the hell? The Travis Frederick draft, same thing. What the hell they draft him for? And they seem to know what the hell they're doing most of the time, 90% of the time. Hmm. So we'll see. You never know with them guys. Do they draft for need? Do they draft the best player? Flip a coin and you'll figure out what they're going to do.
they give every indication of drafting for need this year. And need, to me, could be tackle or center. You and I have disagreed with this. I don't think it's a huge deal. I am very, very leery of drafting a dude who's been... Well, let me say it like this. I am very, very leery of drafting a dude who played right tackle in college and ask him to play left tackle in the NFL. The only thing that would make me not leery per se is if you said, well, dog, he didn't play left tackle in the NFL because they had Joe Hartfield at left tackle, and he was going first round in the draft. I'd be like, oh, okay, so you want to get your best guy on the field, so you put him at right tackle. But asking a dude who played right tackle in college to me, and I'm interested to know what you think, and then saying, hey, we need you to step in and start at left tackle, to me, man, that seemed like you asking for disaster.
I think it depends on the guy. You have to look for certain traits. And like you said, you got to figure out how long he's been playing that. You know, some guys don't need a long pedigree to be good in the NFL. Some guys just got talent. Like the guy from Georgia, Mims from Georgia, he only started 8 games. But like I said, that's because he's been at Georgia. And I don't know. I think if a guy is right tackle in college, you might be able to move him depending on his athleticism. I mean, it's like the scenario you put up. He might have been the best of 5, so you moved him over there. How long have you been over there? I know Terrence Steele can't play left tackle. I know that. You know,
Terrence Steele never in the conversation for left tackle with us.
He played, but he played left tackle. When he played left, he was a turnstile. They put him on right. He came pretty good. He got the big contract. You probably don't remember him at left tackle, but I do. I bet Dak do, too.
Well, I remember that he didn't play that long.
Yeah, they moved his ass because he was giving it up over
there. That's what I remember.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Everybody can't flip. Some guys can. Some guys can't.
Yeah, I think when you're talking about the draft, it's the guy that you're talking about from Georgia. It's, I believe, Morgan out of Arizona. It's just a matter of whether you think they can make the transition, because if the Cowboys draft a tackle, they drafted him and started left tackle from day one.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when you draft and start for a tackle at day one for a team. So, again, man, the thing is, if you draft a cat, number one, even if he played right tackle for whatever reason, don't matter what the reason, he ain't getting no pass if you stick him at left tackle, because that's what you need. And so as long as you're willing to deal with that and he can handle that, it's all good. But there will be no pass giving if you draft a guy and he's not ready to play at left tackle, because you knew your situation, you let the left tackle you had walk, and you didn't take care of it, you didn't leave yourself a backup plan. So, I mean, I think that's really kind of what it boils down to.
So where would you want to see Tyler? Would you want to see him at guard, stay at guard? Or are you worried about him getting kicked out to tackle?
I'm not. They drafted him to be a tackle. Now, they find out that he's all-pro guard. But I would play him at tackle if I thought he could be. He don't have to be an all-pro guard. I mean, all-pro tackle to me. Can he be a top-5 tackle? Okay, fine. Go out there to tackle. Because it's the most important position next to center.
Yep.
Or, you know, so, I mean, we can't be playing out there because all it take is – I mean, we saw that years ago. All it takes is one, uh-oh, and your season is over. My bad.
Uh-oh.
Look out!
Yeah, uh-oh.
You know?
Uh-oh is right, yeah. I missed him. I whiffed on him.
Yeah. We seen that, man. Think about Sherron Dorsey. Years ago, 2017.
Sherron Dorsey.
You know, almost ended Dak's career.
Oh, so. What about your boy that gave up 6 sacks to Claiborne against Atlanta?
That's what I'm talking about.
That's not Dorsey?
No, that's not Sherron Dorsey. That's Sherron Dorsey just died.
Sherron Dorsey was like,
yeah, I know,
a long time back.
Y'all know who the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm having an old man moment.
He was 79. I think he was out of Florida or something.
Out of Florida State.
Yeah, yeah. He gave up 6 sacks. They did not give him no. I was like, they don't like Dak at all. They didn't give that boy no help.
So that's the issue. I think they're going to take a tackle. I mean, I ain't breaking no news. We all think they're going to take a tackle. If not, wouldn't shock me if they took a center, but they need one of the two. But this is supposed to be a deep draft for centers. When you get late in the first round, there's not a lot of tackles left to pick from, so you may just end up who you end up with. Understand this. In any draft, whether it's a good draft or a bad draft, there are typically only 14 to 18 players with first-round grades. Typically. So when the Cowboys are drafting 24, they're really probably on their board getting a guy with a second round talent. All right. So you have to factor that in. Even though he got a first round grade, it's going to be 32 first round picks, even if only 14 to 18 of them typically have first round grades. So that's you know, it's a it's just going to be an interesting draft to me because they got to go offensive line, I think. I ain't breaking no news here, and it'll be interesting to see if they who they pick and who falls to them and if there are some surprises. Because the reality is there are surprises in every draft, and guys go higher and lower than we expect, and maybe that'll work out and they benefit this year.
Yeah, the 14 first-round grades is an interesting point because when the Cowboys drafted Travis Frederick, and everybody was like, in the first round, they was like, oh, he had a second-round grade. Well, hell, where they drafted him at wasn't far from the second round. And I bit into that. I actually listened to that, and I went, yeah, he had a second-round grade. And then I realized where he was drafted at. It's not that far off. You know, at the top of the first round, the end of the first, same damn thing.
Yeah, ain't that far off at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. Let's take a trip around the block, man.
Around the block. Sir.
The juice died this week, man. And he took a little bit of my childhood with him. You know, I've been conflicted about the juice since he got caught up in this whole Nicole Simpson, Ryan Goldman thing. Whether he did it, whether he knew who did it, whether he helped somebody do it, you know. And that's because I spent, I lived in Buffalo from the time I was 3 until I was 8. Then moved to Dallas until the summer of 1975 with the Dirty Dozen. And quickly became a Dallas Cowboys fan because, hell, the Buffalo Bills stunk and the Dallas Cowboys was on their way to the Super Bowl in 75. So it wasn't hard for me to make the switch. But I learned to love football watching the electric company turn loose the juice in Buffalo. In the mid 70s, early 70s, man. And OJ, much like Tony Dorsett in Dallas, OJ was my first sports hero. I mean, and how could he not be growing up in Buffalo? And what I mean is, I was all things OJ as a kid. I remember going to Rich Stadium, watching him a couple times. I believe I was at the game where he had 200 yards against the Patriots. Because the next week is when he broke the record. And I remember watching that game at my godmother's house with her husband at the time. I remember the whole play that he gained over 2,000 yards. And I remember him carrying off all of that. So I've been a little bit conflicted because, you know, it's weird. When somebody you root for and cheer for that long gets mixed up in something as heinous is the crimes that he was involved in, allegedly, that he went to trial for and that he was acquitted for, you just be like, damn, it's hard to root for him after that, or hard to, you know, because you just feel conflicted because, I don't know, Doc. So it was a weird thing hearing that he died because it still hit me because I still remember being a huge fan growing up, and I remember the morning that the murders became public, and I heard it on Norm Hiskus was doing the broadcast, reading the news off, and I heard it on a cliff in the morning, and I was just like, damn. And I remember kind of walking around in a funk that day. And then I remember being in the Rangers clubhouse. I don't know why this sticks with me, but it was the day Rusty Greer and Darren Oliver got promoted to the big leagues. Watching the Bronco chase in the clubhouse right before the game. Nobody was getting ready for the game, man. Players, media, everybody watching OJ in the Bronco on national TV. And it was just wild. You got any OJ thoughts?
Yeah, I was thinking the Bronco chase. Hell, they wouldn't have followed me to my house. They'd have pitted my ass and rolled a damn truck and yanked me up out of there. The hell was, you know, that was the longest chase in the world. Yeah, I can understand the being conflicted about, you know, something like that, your heroes and stuff like that. I'm conflicted about John Wayne. Mm. I'm a big-time John Wayne fan. And then you do the research where he said those racist things to Playboys. Well, guess what? I'm still a John Wayne fan. Because the characters he played in them movies, Green Berets, The Quiet Man, Sons of Cady Elder, True Grit, Rooster Cogburn, still some of my favorite stuff. So, OJ, I can understand the things that John Wayne did versus what OJ was accused of is way more severe. The things that OJ did is way more severe. But I can see how you can be kind of conflicted like that. I always thought, I didn't think he did it, but I thought he had something to do with it.
Right.
You know, I don't know, man. The whole OJ thing is crazy because what I remember, I don't remember where I was during the chase, but I remember where I was during the verdict. I was in the break room. I wasn't a driver yet. I was in the break room, at the warehouse break room at Sigma. And I remember this lady at my job named Sandra when they Sandra was a redhead. And I remember, what I'm saying, Sandra was Caucasian. And I remember they read the verdict and the black people was like, yeah. And Sandra looked around like, it's like death, you know, it was terrible. And I just thought, man, she don't feel the same way I do. And it really wasn't OJ. It wasn't OJ on trial. It was the system on trial. When he got acquitted, it was really the system. You understand? Right. Where people have been done wrong in Los Angeles and black people around the country have been wrongly accused. I think that saved OJ's ass right there. And I was cheering more. I was cheering for the win against the corrupt system more than I was cheering for OJ. And it was just one of them things where you get caught up and you realize that everybody don't feel the same way that you do. And I didn't hold it against Sandra at all. You know, we still was friends and all that. But her thoughts on it and our thoughts on it was totally different.
Yeah. I mean, clearly he became a controversial figure. And, you know, he'll be one now until the end of time because, it's doubtful. I mean, I don't think the true story was ever going to come out anyway, but now that he's gone, you know, it's doubtful that it's ever going to come out.
Yeah.
It dies with him. And so, it's the death of an icon. An icon does not have to be positive. It's just he's an iconic figure in sports. I love him as a running back because he's so smooth.
Yeah, he was iconic because hell, he was an icon until he wasn't an icon. You can't, you can't be responsible for what he was responsible for.
Yeah, well, he was able to shift. He was able to shift from athlete to the TV to actor, in part because white folks loved him and accepted him, and sometimes black folks felt a certain way about that. Sometimes they didn't, but just his.
OJ, he didn't bother me like that. I liked him in the movies. I didn't care about his personal life and all of that other stuff. And a lot of people, I can see what you're saying about that, but I didn't really, it was kind of like he was running through airports and he was on routes. And every movie he was in, he ran some damn where. Like him, him and Jim Brown, a lot of times, it was all physicality.
Right. So no, I'm reminded of that, and it's it's just a weird time. But O.J. Simpson, dead of prostate cancer at 76, and that's also my time to say that's a big killer in the black community, and so all men, but especially if you're black man, you need to go have a colonoscopy done. Make sure your colon is good, that you got nothing hiding there, because a lot of times by the time they find cancer, by the time cancer reveals itself, you deep into it. And so all the preventative maintenance you can do is good for your health. And, get over this whole thing about, I don't want nobody sticking the camera up my butt. Please, that's overrated. I had one when I turned, I don't think I had it when I turned 50. Seemed like I had it at 52 or 53, but I might have had it when I was 50. I just remember it literally, me, man. Now, they ain't finna put me to sleep. Let me see how long I can last. 199. I'm gone. And I woke up, and guy said, "Man, you've got one of the cleanest colors we've ever seen. You look great. Come back in a decade if you need to." And so that to me is very comforting. The worst thing about the process to me is probably that goop you got to drink the day before. But the actual process, man, please. You know, I didn't feel a thing. Woke up, didn't feel a thing. I mean, it was basically a painless procedure, but it's one that can save your life. So get your prostate examined and do your best to keep cancer at bay. You got anything to add to that?
Nope. It's all good.
My fitness tip for the week. I was trying to see if I was going, you know, I was thinking about a recipe, but then I don't like to give a recipe until I have perfected it, because I like for y'all to enjoy it as much as I enjoy it, or, you know, at least be able to put your own flavor to it. We've talked a little bit about it before. I'm just going to remind y'all again. Now, this is just me. I don't like drinking calories. And so whether you're thinking Gatorade, and you're talking to somebody who used to think, oh, let me drink this Gatorade. It's good for me. It's got electrolytes. It's not soda. It's not juice. It's good. And one day I looked on the side of a Gatorade bottle, about had a heart attack. About 30 grams of sugar. And I was drinking them 32-ounce bottles, which is 4 servings. So imagine how much sugar I was down. And so that's my way of saying I encourage you guys to drink water. Or, you know, I drink some Gatorade Zero these days when I'm working out. There's a lot of drinks that don't have very much sugar in them that you can drink. But water, sparkling water, club soda, those are really the best because they don't contain anything but water. And so you can't drink your calories and add those empty calories to you. That's always, always, always a positive. The other thing I'd like to tell y'all is 2 things. One is about exercise. I was talking to a friend of mine last week. Dog, I need to lose weight. Got to lose some weight, man. I'm bigger than I've ever been. And I said, all right. And I said, well, you know, one of the things you got to do is schedule it. Well, I don't have time. I said, dog, that's why you got to schedule it. Unless you're a person who likes to work out, I would highly recommend you schedule your workouts, just like you schedule everything else in your life if it's important to you. That way, until you get into a habit, you're making sure that you're moving on a regular basis, that you're getting something in and out of you're moving your body on a regular basis, you're exerting some energy, and you're moving. And until you get into a habit, you're going to always have things to do that are going to be more important than exercise. I told y'all, I exercise in the morning because that's the one part of the day nobody wants. Maybe you got another part of the day that nobody wants. Well, use that time. But you have to schedule it 2 or 3 times a week, 45 minutes to an hour. Some of that is to stretch before and after. Some of that might be just walking. But you need that time to warm up and then cool down, 10 minutes at the start, 10 minutes at the end, and about 40 minutes to work out. I'm not saying go kill yourself. I just said move your body and get used to working out and moving those muscles, because it'll hurt a little bit just because they haven't been used in a while, but it's nothing that you can't handle. So that's one thing. It's a schedule exercise. And the other thing is, remember, everybody's human, bro. One bad day, one bad meal does not wreck an eating plan, because you're not on a diet. I don't believe in diets. So you're not on a diet. You're just on an eating plan. So if you have a bad day, regroup, come back the next day. Part of the way you do that is, check this out, bro. Eat before you get hungry. Eat when you're not hungry. Schedule your eating. I'm going to eat breakfast at 8. I'm going to eat lunch at 11:30. I'm going to have a snack at 2. I'm going to have another snack at 4:30. I'm going to eat dinner at 6:30. Then I'm done for the rest of the day. Or whatever the times work for you. And then carry some food in your car. Maybe you got a little box in your car so it won't melt or get hot. So that when you get those cravings, instead of stocking at McDonald's, Jack in the Box, Taco Cabana, whatever your crack of choice is, you got something in your car that you can snack on and to get you home, man. So that's just a few tips on how to get that summer body right. You can always call SodaWeightLoss.com. They can help you. They helped me. Dropped 50 pounds 5 years ago. Keep it off. Y'all know I stay sexy. If I do say so myself.
I thought we was going to get away. I thought we was going to get a whole damn show over with. All right, then. Go ahead, bro.
I appreciate you, Doc.
Yeah.
But that's my weight loss tips for the week. We have some recipes next week for you. I'm working on a couple things I'm trying to perfect. You know, just remember, eat right. You know what you ain't supposed to eat. If your plate got a whole bunch of fried food on it, you ain't supposed to be eating that on the regular while you're trying to get your summer body right. But again, we're on the eating plan, not a diet. So in moderation, all things are good. But that's our trip around the block this week, man. You got two of the best teams in the NBA. And I'm just going to give you a little hint because Mavericks don't play for a whole another week. So we're going to get into them next week. We'll start looking ahead to the Mavericks-Clippers matchup. I think it's going to be fun. The Mavericks are playing some of the best basketball in the league with Luka and Kyrie. But I'm telling you, man, Clippers ain't no joke. They got Paul George. They got James Harden. They got Kawhi Leonard, who's battling a bit of a knee injury. And they got Russell Westbrook.
What's that? They still got the Highland kid?
I don't know.
Skinny Highland? Something like that.
I ain't done my research on them yet.
Yeah.
I just know until I do my research, I just know the big four.
Right.
And,
got it.
You know, Kawhi Leonard got some injuries right now, and so he's not at full strength. Paul George is balling out. James Harden is still a dangerous player, although he's not what he once was. And then Russell Westbrook always plays with an attitude that can create problems, especially when he's feeling it. That being said, I think the Mavericks are in a good spot. I don't know if I think they're going to win the series yet. I think it's going to be a long series, but I think the Mavericks will play well. I'm gonna take a deep dive on them next week, and we'll discuss them a little more in detail.
To me, it's all about pressure, man. The Mavericks ain't got no pressure. See, if the Mavericks beat down the Clippers, okay, we wasn't expecting that. But the Clippers got all the pressure. Sometimes pressure bursts the pipe. And it make the team that's supposed to be, you know, the higher seed, it make them, you know, hey, we can't lose to these guys. Or why are we losing these guys? Make them question everything. So
that's interesting. In basketball, I only believe that this is a very nuanced statement I'm making. Because I want to make sure I say it right. In basketball, because this only applies to basketball for me, I only believe that based on who your superstar is. Does that make sense to you? I don't think there's a situation, this is weird saying this, where the Mavericks would feel pressure one way or the other, because I don't think Kyrie and Luka care about pressure.
No, I'm not saying them. I'm saying the pressure is on the Clippers because they
I'm not even talking about this series.
Yeah.
I'm talking about in general. Like, I don't think those two guys, I don't think pressure bothers them. And so I think that would carry over to their team.
Well, when Kyrie was in Boston, pressure got to his ass because they didn't win.
But see, this is what I'm saying. I'm not disputing that. That was a different Kyrie because that was like 3 years ago. Yeah. And that was a different team.
Yeah.
So, like, I would be interested. Now, here's what I mean. I would be interested because I haven't seen Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in this situation. I would be interested to see if they feel pressure because no one is supposed to touch them in the East. And I haven't seen them compete enough up close and read enough about them to know if that's the kind of thing that could bother them.
Well, I agree. I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying if you Boston and you get the seventh seed or whatever, and you lose a game to them, a couple of games to them, and stuff start going your way, I mean, going against you,
right?
That's where pressure. All expectations is on Boston because, like you said, can't nobody touch them.
Now, see, I would ask you this. This is just a question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there really pressure on the Clippers as a number four seed for a team that nobody cares about? Because it's all about the Lakers. Nobody cares about the Clippers.
Yeah, I don't think you can put pressure on Kawhi Leonard. I think you can put pressure on Westbrook, James, and James Harden, and Paul George. I think them guys are going to get the pressure. Them guys, you know, they want it so bad. You know, they want to win championships down there.
Right.
I mean, in L.A., don't nobody care about the Clippers, but, you know, I think that pressure can trip them up against the Mavericks. Mavericks is a good team. That's the team you don't want to see. The Mavericks are playing with house money, in my opinion.
Right.
I mean, it ain't too many games separating the first seed and the damn sixth seed. You know.
It's a very interesting conversation because they all got different storylines. Like, you could say, the Nuggets have won back-to-back championships. So, is pressure on them? Or are they like, damn, we done won back-to-back. Nobody really expects us to win three. So, we just chilling.
It depends on the matchup. What the matchup is, I'll say pressure make a big difference and expectations make, you know, create pressure. That's what I'm getting at. And then, you know, in basketball, like you're saying, basketball make a difference. But here's the thing about basketball. It's not just one game. It's a series. And when momentum starts going your way in a series, you know, or going against you in a series, ain't nothing you can do about it sometimes. You can change hotels. You can change jerseys. You can do whatever. You can do the Avery Johnson type of shit. But
and that was some of the worst stuff. Because now you acknowledge that the shit is there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sitting up here looking at the West. Like, if Oklahoma City, this is wild that Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and Denver all tied for the number one seed.
Yeah.
Like Oklahoma City ain't never done nothing with this particular group of guys.
Right.
And then let's just say they finish second and they end up having to play the Suns in the first round of the playoffs. You're like, y'all might have a problem because the Suns, to me, are a very dangerous team with KD.
In that aspect, I think the Suns are playing with house money. And because them guys is the number one seed or the number two seed,
yeah,
the pressure is on them. The expectations are them. On them.
And they haven't done anything. Them and Minnesota have done nothing.
Right.
As with their current teams.
Yeah.
So.
How do you handle that?
Yeah. So we have no idea whether they're going to come out and ball out or whether they're going to be like, oh, my God. You know, maybe winning the best record was enough for them. So it's going to be all the West is loaded. The West is really tough.
What's the best record in the West? What's the most wins? 67 or something?
No, 56. 50? Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and Denver all got 56.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you could look at Boston with 64 wins, but you play most of your games in the East. And the East this year, you know.
I don't trust Boston until they do it. But they're a pretty good team this year. They playing as a team. I don't trust them until they do it. Jason Tatum disappeared too many times.
Well, you can say that. I mean, I'm not going to dispute you, but and see, they got they're 14 games better than anybody else in the East. The Knicks are beat up right now. The Bucks are beat up right now. I mean, and so we sit up and say all this, and I was like, you know, I can see a lot of pressure being on the Celtics because literally they're the one of most games. There's nobody in the East who looks like they're supposed to compete with them.
Right.
So
right. That's why I say them expectations
are at their very highest everywhere.
Yeah.
Where you could look in the West and there's a lot of, I don't know that expectations sit on too many teams.
Right.
Other than maybe Denver. And even that seems a little unrealistic. Like, you really think the Nuggets going to win three in a row? It's more like we hope to play good basketball. I don't don't know.
That's the best thing about basketball, though. It's a series. I mean, anything could happen. You know, in football, it's one game. You know, baseball is a series, you know.
See, I don't think anything can happen in a basketball series. I think the best team typically wins 4 out of 7.
Now, yeah,
but 3 out of 5, you can steal that first win.
But that's what I'm saying, though. That's what I'm saying. Typically they win out of 4 out of 7. But sometimes you get that. What do you say? You say I got a chance. Hell, you got a chance to upset them, you know, rather than, you know, the one game deal or somebody get hot, just play out their mind. I'd be worried about Anthony Edwards going crazy, Ant-Man going crazy on somebody, and everybody coming with him.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because what does Minnesota have to lose? Same thing with Shai Gilgeous. You know, Shai Gilgeous Alexander, you know, and that whole team, they got a lot of young players on now. Shai being the old man at about 27, you know. So they got a good team. Yeah, basketball.
No, it's going to be fun. I'm ready for the playoffs.
Yes, sir.
We're going to have some late nights because the Mavericks are going to start with the Clippers, which means 9 o'clock tips or 9:30 tips.
It ain't baseball.
No.
Baseball is back to back to back. Boy, that is them 3 games in a row or whatever. Yeah, that was an ass kicker. But I enjoyed it, though. I didn't know that was coming. See what I'm saying?
No, I didn't know that was coming. So, we're going to get into this basketball. You know, it's going to be fun. Mavericks got a great team, and they got a shot this year because they got 2 superstars. Contrary to my man Michael Wilbon, one of the best reporters out there, one of the biggest names in sports, you know, and this happens sometimes, so I'm not just talking about him. He was saying something the other day about, and Kenny Smith said the same thing, and I expect Kenny Smith to know better because he's in the game. Mike is in the game too, but not at the level where he's doing it every day. And Kenny Smith was like, hey, if the team needs 3 stops, I'd pick the Clippers over the Mavericks to get some stops in a row. And Mike was talking about the Mavericks. He's like, the Mavericks aren't going to stop anybody when it matters. Since the trade, the Mavericks have been the best defensive team in the league. Period, point blank, defensive efficiency. They've been number one
since the trade. Sometimes you don't look at numbers, you look at players.
That's fine.
I'm not saying that's what I'm doing. I'm just saying that's what they probably doing.
That's what I'm saying.
They looking at how many stars got this and all that. I know.
That's why I said what I said. Just like if you've been following the Mavericks, they've been a much different team, much better defensive team. And I'm not saying they're the best defensive team in the league, but they're playing very well defensively right now. They're one of the best teams at not giving up points in the paint right now in terms of shooting percentage. And that's because Gafford is up there trying to block everything. And when he's not lively, he's trying to block everything. So
They're young.
They're much better defensive team than they have been. They got 2 offensive superstars. I'm not predicting a title, but what I am saying is there's nobody looking forward to playing the Dallas Mavericks right now. Nobody. Because they got it going. Now, we'll see if they can keep it going. And to me, I worry about that more than anything else when I'm talking about the Dallas Mavericks, which is what, bro? They're going to get about 12, 13, 14 days off. That's a long time for a team that was playing in a great rhythm and a great groove. You know, and now you got to hope that you have it when you come back. But, you know, like I said, we're going to get deep into the Mavericks next week, the Stars too, because the playoffs are starting for both of them coming up soon. Remember, we can't do this without Grinning Law. If you're ever involved in an accident, 972-934-8900 is the number to call. We appreciate you following the show, The Real Jacques Talk, on the YouTube channel. Subscribe, like, leave a comment, give us a review. We'd appreciate it. Big things popping. You can follow the show on IG at The Real Jacques Talk. You can follow me on Twitter, X, at JJT Journalist. Again, my account's been hijacked, so if you think you follow me, you probably don't. And then you can always find me on Clapper. Download the app, Clapper, and give a lot of Cowboys content over there. So until we chat again, for Big Joe and the Big Rig, you guys be blessed.